This is Polyphonic Press. The podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is... Hole, Live Through This.
Hmm, okay.
It's a description of the album. It says, Live Through This, released in 1994 by Hole, is a raw, emotionally charged album that captures the turbulent spirit of the 1990s alternative rock scene. Released just a week after the death of Kurt Cobain and only months before the tragic passing of bassist Kristen Pfaff, I guess, the record is both deeply personal and culturally resonant. Courtney Love's fierce vocals cut through layers of punk aggression and melodic grunge, blending rage, vulnerability, and biting wit in equal measure. The album balances abrasive guitar riffs with surprisingly hook-laden choruses, offering anthems that swing between chaotic catharsis and melodic accessibility. Songs like Miss World and Violet tear into themes of identity, femininity, and self-destruction, while tracks such as Doll Parts expose raw longing and fragility. Its lyrics dissect beauty standards, fame, and the dark undercurrents of love and loss, giving the record a confrontational yet deeply human edge. Often hailed as Hole's defining work, Live Through This stands as one of the most significant feminist statements in rock. It pushed grunge into more emotionally complex territory, resonating with listeners who saw themselves in love's unapologetic anger and aching vulnerability. Today, it's remembered not just as Hole's breakthrough, but as a landmark alternative rock album of the 1990s. This album was released April 12th, 1994. And the genres are alternative rock, grunge, and punk rock. And the label that was released on is DGC, and produced by Paul Coldery and Sean Slade. It doesn't really give. This was right when CDs were the main medium that people listen to music, so it doesn't really give side one and side two. But there are 12 songs on the album. So what we'll do is we'll stop after song number 6, which is Doll Parts. So if you're listening along, which we do encourage you to do, what we do is we take a pause halfway through the album. So after Doll Parts, if you want to stop and listen to the halfway discussion. And we've linked the album to both Spotify and Apple Music, so you can get it on your preferred streaming service. But here we go. Here is the first song on the album, Violet. So here we go.
And the sky was made of amethyst. And all the stars were just like little fish. You should learn when to go. You should learn how to say no.
Ending the first half of the album with Doll Parts. I'm actually really liking this so far. I'm finding a lot of the guitar parts and a lot of the instrumentation is very hooky, and it's surprisingly melodic from the vague sort of notion that I had of Hole.
Yeah, they're a very tight band, and they've actually got a pretty good sense of melody. I don't know, it was quite to the standards that, like, they're pretty, I guess, I mean, the comparisons are, you can't help but make comparisons to a band like Nirvana, and they're pretty well on par with that. And I've always said that, when in the early 2000s, when the Vines came about, that they were like that, but a little bit more melodic. So I don't think these guys are quite to that level of melodic, but they're pretty good. Definitely, for this style of music, it works really well. And I've also want to comment on her voice. She doesn't have the prettiest voice in the world, but it works for the stuff that she does.
Yeah, it's like Bob Dylan, where it's not the best voice, but it's an honest voice, right? She's not like Mariah Carey or something like that, but the singing wouldn't really work with this.
No, exactly. That's what I mean. And you actually want something dirtier and raspier, like, for that thing. I don't know if that's necessarily entirely attributed to, I mean, she might have sort of adapted her voice to do this, but I don't know what else, what other kind of singing voice she has. I just don't know. What she's using for this, it suits it very well.
Yeah, it really does. Like you're saying, the comparison, the obvious comparison is Nirvana. And not only is it grunge music, like, she was married to Kurt Cobain, and so they do have a similar singing style. Like his the way he, for lack of, it's not really screaming, but like the, I don't even know what to call it, but the sort of, like, he would go into this into more of a softer tone for, and then he would sort of let loose, and she's doing sort of the same thing. So
yeah.
So it's definitely in that same style, but she's doing her own thing with it. And, it's not like a carbon copy. She's not like a female Kurt Cobain or anything like that. It's taking maybe some inspiration from that, but, she's doing her own, and the band itself sounds nothing like Nirvana, like the guitars and the drummer sounds nothing like Dave Grohl or anything. So it's still grunge, and it's grunge is a label that the marketing people put on it. It's still like early 90s alternative music, but it's its own thing. And that's what I find with a lot of the quote unquote grunge bands. It really, like, I don't think Pearl Jam sound anything like Nirvana. And because they actually incorporated, you think that the thing that the line that gets compared to grunge music is that it was heavily influenced by punk rock, and a lot of it was, but you had bands like Pearl Jam who were really more blues based, and also Soundgarden too had a lot of Led Zeppelin influence. So it really, it's funny, people get this idea of what quote unquote grunge is, but it really crosses a whole spectrum of influences. And really, it's just all those bands for the most part came out of Seattle, and it was more of a regional label than it was a genre.
Exactly. I was going to say it's basically the Seattle music scene in the late 80s, early 90s was the grunge movement.
Yeah.
And it's more accurate to attribute it to the grunge movement as opposed to the grunge sound, because there's no one sound. It was a scene.
Exactly. Yeah. And even the bands that came a little bit after that, like Hole and like Smashing Pumpkins, who weren't from Seattle, they sort of got lumped into that, but they were still part of the that alternative music scene. But
so was Sloan in their first album.
Sloan was too. Yeah, they were sort of in that as well. You know, there were a lot of bands from all over North America, really, that sort of got that label put on them, and yet a lot of them sounded totally different. I don't know why that is, why people sort of got this notion of, oh yeah, grunge sounds like that. And then, but if you really look into it, like, no two bands really sound alike. Like, it's not like the punk rock movement of the late 70s, where you could see a lot of similarities with a lot of the bands.
No, it's true. There's a, like, I can see the similarities between, like, this band and Nirvana. And, you know, there's a couple of other ones in there. But yeah, the comparing Nirvana to Pearl Jam was always sounded a little off to me, because Pearl Jam just sounded nothing like Nirvana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they came from the same scene. Yeah.
Came from the same place. That's the only similarity. And so, you know, when you get this is obviously very influenced by punk rock. I can hear a lot of Joan Jett in her voice.
Yes, very definitely what I was thinking. Musically the band is very much like the Blackhearts, or even what was her band before that? The Runaways.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. That, like, the song Plump, that's like a late 70s like power pop song. Like, I could hear the Runaways doing that, or even like Cheap Trick or something.
Yeah.
And that's the song I was thinking of when I said, like, the guitar riffs and everything, that they're very hooky. Like, that's a very poppy sort of.
Yeah, I like that one. That was cool.
It would fit in really well with that sort of, if you took this and placed it in like 1978, it would fit in pretty well, I think.
Yeah, some of it for sure. But again, it fits in really well in 1994 as well.
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's just that sound. Yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of, I don't want to say timeless, but it does like fit in. Maybe it is timeless, because it could very well have been made at any time, really.
There's still bands out there doing stuff like this now, because the 90s had a huge influence on later generations as well. I know I've got lots of friends who listen to a lot of stuff from the 90s, and you put a guitar, an electric guitar in their hands, and it's generally going to sound not unlike this, they have their own styles and stuff like that, but there's an influence definitely from this period for sure, especially, the Nirvanas and the Soundgardens and whatnot from the scene for sure.
Yeah. And I did manage to find a few, pretty interesting facts about the album. This is kind of odd and kind of heartbreaking, is the timing of its release, the album came out on April 12th, 1994, just 4 days after Kurt Cobain's death. This tragic coincidence cast a long shadow over the record and shaped much of the public perception surrounding it. Yeah, and the fact that it's called Live Through This,
yeah,
it's a lot of people read into that, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it's not. It was basically just a... that was just a lyric from, what was it, Asking for It? That's all she picked it for. I'm sure it was picked before he, pulled the trigger.
Oh, yeah. Well, the fact, 4 days, they would all be basically be shipping to the record stores at that point.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think people were just in shock. And then all of a sudden she has an album a few days later out called Live Through This. Like you said, it is a lyric from one of the songs, but it's people definitely, I think just the shock of that, to how that happened, people were like, how could you put an album out and call it that when your husband just died? And just like people just not thinking rationally at that point. But I remember seeing some music documentary talking about it and how people were sort of upset by the title. And yeah, and Kristen Pfaff, the Hole's bassist, Kristen Pfaff died of a heroin overdose only 2 months after the album's release.
Wow.
This added another layer of tragedy to an album already steeped in themes of mortality and fragility. So yeah, it was a pretty dark time when this album came out.
Yeah, it's, I don't know if, I mean, the scene was great for music, but again, there was a lot of, I know the relationship between Courtney Love and Kurt Cobain was tumultuous.
Yeah, it definitely was.
So I don't know if that was necessarily the healthiest environment for a lot of people around. I don't know. I think it goes with like any scene like that. There's, the dark underground or... Well, there's, it was an underground movement, but it was, there's always the dark side of it. And then there's people who, they can step outside of that thing. You're like, okay, yeah, that's when the, the hard stuff comes out. That's my time to leave.
yeah. And, in the 90s, obviously, like, I think most of the people in that scene weren't into hard drugs like heroin, but it definitely had its, it was definitely part of the image. And there was, looking back on it, it's so distasteful. It made its way into fashion, and there was this movement called heroin chic.
Derelict.
Well, yeah, that's what they were sort of mocking in that movie. Yeah. But it was like there were like fashion shoots of like people in like dirty clothes and in like rundown houses, and it was part of like fashion for like 2 or 3 years, and it was really like I didn't know about it because I was a kid at the time, but it's looking back on it, it's like. Really?
No, we were in neon windbreakers that 90s.
That's right. With the pink and teal.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, looking at some of the high fashion that was happening at the time, it's like, holy shit. Like, you would never get away with something like that today.
I don't know. Some people try. But yeah, it was... Yeah, that was a little bit extreme, probably, I think. I mean... Pushing boundaries has always been kind of like, part of the art, but some boundaries are a little bit, they're there for a reason. They're a little distasteful to push on them too hard. But again, that's just, it is what it is.
Yeah. And I think now maybe like my sort of, The way that I see it now is like knowing what we know now about addiction and how it's more of a mental health thing than anything else.
Yeah.
I think maybe they weren't quite as aware of that at the time.
Yeah.
Cause addiction was not really seen that way. It was more seen as, yeah, something you need to get help for, but it's not, you know, they didn't know that people have like addictive personalities, and it doesn't matter if it's like heroin or gambling or whatever, people are going to engage in compulsive behavior.
There was still, the stigma was a whole lot more present at the time, for sure. Yeah, mental health stigma was not at its greatest during the 20th century.
No, it really wasn't. despite skepticism about Courtney Love's credibility as a musician at the time, Live Through This was widely praised by critics. Publications like Rolling Stone and Spin lauded its blend of raw aggression and melodic songwriting, and it has since been included in many greatest albums of all times lists. Yeah, I think people at the time just saw her as Kurt Cobain's wife. They didn't really take her seriously as a songwriter.
No, it's true. But again, her band, I mean, they met through the music scene, you know, at shows where they would play, you know, others. Her band was obviously the more underground, where his was gaining huge popularity across the country. I want to make it clear that I don't think that her popularity was entirely riding on his coattails, because there is actually genuine, you know, artistry in the album and in, you know, the stuff leading up to it. I mean, she actually had talent. I don't think Kurt Cobain would have been that interested in anybody who didn't, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, and you know, if she didn't, we wouldn't still be talking about this album 30 years later.
Well, unless it was, you know, something kind of like the Shags or something like that, where it came out specifically because, you know, it was this thing that was released 4 days after Kurt Cobain died, and, you know, everybody thinks she did it, whatever. And it's not that, really. It may have
Which,
been,
for the record, I don't think she did it.
I don't
That's
think she
ridiculous.
Did it.
Yeah. But yeah, no, if she wasn't a good songwriter, it wouldn't be on a list of greatest albums of all time. Like, yeah, that was, and you know, like I think, but to be fair, being associated with Kurt Cobain definitely helped, but if it wasn't a good album, people would just, you know, dismiss it right away and it would go nowhere.
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah, I agree. There might have been like a push, an initial push of curiosity, but beyond that, it would have just fallen flat, and her career didn't completely fall flat after this. So,
yeah, and the album is often considered a feminist landmark in alternative rock. Songs like Asking For It and She Walks On Me confront issues of gender roles, objectification, and female rage in ways that were still rare in mainstream rock at the time. Yeah, and I think this album sort of paved the way for people like Alanis Morissette and just women in general being able to be front and center in music.
Yeah, the 90s was a big decade for women in music. There was a lot of women in music suddenly, and a lot of them were singer-songwriters. You had people like, well, you said Alanis Morissette. Lots of, you know, people who went under their... Not too many who had bands. I mean, they had bands behind them, but not too many who presented themselves like a band. But there was lots of single female artists. You had Jan Arden, you had I'm trying to think of other Sarah McLachlan, and crosses the whole gamut. You've got Tracy Chapman, just a whole bunch of them. I listed off a bunch of Canadian ones because they're the forefront of what we were listening to up here, but they got pretty big in the States too. So,
yeah, and it was sort of like a Even though I really like their music, bands like the Bangles and the Go-Go's in the 80s, they were seen more as a novelty, which they weren't. I mean, they were like really good songwriters, but they weren't seen that way.
No, they were almost seen as a gimmick. And it's a shame because they were formed just as legitimately as, you know, the vast whopping majority of guy bands. Bunch of guys, you know, who are friends generally, not, you know, entirely. Sometimes it's a posting, you know, ad somewhere like we need a drummer badly or something like that. But, you know, a bunch of guys get together and they form a band and, you know, on their way they go to fame and fortune, not as often. But yeah, a band like the Bangles for sure. Yeah, they were actually decent musicians, all of them. And like, you know, Hole here. I mean, they're a really tight band.
I mean, it's not all women, but the Courtney Love and Kristen Pfaff, the bass player, and actually it is all women except for the guitar player, Eric Erlandson, Patty Schemel on drums. That was even more rare at the time, almost, is have a band of mixed genders, like men and women.
Yeah. So
it was either all guys or all women or a woman fronting a band of all guys.
Yeah. Or you're the B-52s.
Or you're the B-52s.
Yeah, again. And a lot of people saw them as a novelty act too, but honestly, I think they're great.
They're fantastic. And lastly, beyond the initial success of the album, the record influenced countless female fronted rock bands, like we were saying, in the late 90s and 2000s. Artists ranging from Garbage to Paramore have cited it as a touchstone for blending vulnerability with aggression. So yeah, a huge influence on future artists as well. But yeah, those are five interesting facts about the album. But I guess we'll get back into the second half, and it starts with this song, A Credit in the Straight World. So here we go.
All right.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
Well, I went to school. Oh. Well, I went to school. Well, I went to school in Olympia. But everyone wants to say, what do you do with a revolution?
And ending the album with Rockstar. I really like this album. I mean, the guitar work is great. Again, her vocals are really good. It's pretty consistent through the whole album. I mean, you know, there wasn't really a lull or anything that I found.
No, I think the second half is better than the first half. But the first half wasn't exactly bad. I mean, that's where the singles are. But I enjoyed the second half. I thought it was a little more interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a pretty solid album. The second half is very interesting. But I think it flows pretty well. Like I think getting from the first half to the second half is a pretty nice sort of trip. I really can't say much bad about it, to be honest.
No, I can't either. Actually, it's pretty solid. You know, her, I mean, you can definitely hear a little bit of the Nirvana influence in this album, absolutely, but she's still doing stuff that's, she's got her own thing going for sure. And some of the songwriting is, you know, top notch, and it's not really, you know, in the same, her songwriting isn't the same as Kurt Cobain's or anything like that. That's what, you know, a lot of people would probably think that she was aping him. And I don't think that's fair.
No, it definitely isn't. I mean, she's singing from her own perspective. She's not really, I would go even further and say, I don't think her songwriting is really like anyone else. Let alone Kurt Cobain. Like,
well, nobody up to this point, that's for sure. A lot of people have sort of taken her style and actually, you know, imitated it since. But, you know, up to this, yeah, her style was pretty unique for sure. I got to say, that song Credit in the Straight World, that was probably one of the best things I've heard on this podcast since we did the Love Forever Changes album.
And I will obey your highness, I'm so high I cannot walk. And I will obey, you cripple, you take away my time, my peace, my empathy. No baby sleep on atrophy. Your unborn love and fetal stress are bitter candy laid as grass.
There was some good stuff since then, but I think that one was actually the best. That was a good song. I think people should cover that song. That's a straight bop.
Yeah, I agree. So that's a pretty good transition. Is that one of your highlights?
Oh yeah, that's the number one song on this album for sure. I think that's the best song on the whole album. I think I'd probably pick She Walks on Me is really good too. I'm going to go with Plump because that was a pretty good song too, but Credit in the Straight World is it's worth the cost of the album, I think.
Yeah, I would probably go with Plump and Credit in the Straight World as well. And Gutless, I really like that. Yeah, those would be my picks for sure. So I guess that brings us to the question is, would you listen to this album again?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, me too. I'm pleasantly surprised by this. And, yeah, I think it's, I'm going to add it to my, my library. So yeah, for sure. So I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening. If you made it this far, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to, drop us a line, go to the website polyphonicpress.com and you can go to the contact page and maybe we'll read your feedback on the air. And while you're there, you can check out all the previous episodes and get to all sorts of updates and things like that. And you can also help us out on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress and get these episodes the day before they go live, and pick an album for us to review and get a shout out during these episodes. And yeah, if this is your first time listening, be sure to follow the show and leave a rating and review, because it really helps new listeners find us. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.